Only the victim is alive and the murderers are not. It's a pity you didn't know when you started your game of murder that I was playing too.
It has been established that persons who have recently died have been returning to life and committing acts of murder.
Do you believe in ghosts?
First simply disappears, the other two died.
Hello, hello, my pretties. It's your criminal researcher and non-destructive cult leader, Ashley Lana, welcoming you back, and thank you for joining me tonight. I have some exciting news for your cult. I hope you are ready for this, because Lullaby the Fear podcast has received the prestigious nomination in the 6th Annual Canadian Podcast Awards for the category of Outstanding True Crime. Allow me, I told myself I wasn't going to do this, but I'm going to do this. I get really passionate really quick and I try to calm down, but I'm starting to learn that people like hearing excitement in other people, so let's be excited together. So the awards will be held in December, and I could not be any more nervous and excited at the same time. Just being nominated is truly an honor, and Lullaby wouldn't be as successful as it is without you, the listeners. Thank you, Fear Cult. When I say I love you guys, like every episode, I fucking mean it, bud. Like, let's fucking send her. Canadian accent just comes out a little bit. And thank you. It's about recognizing the patterns and ensuring the safety of individuals. So by preserving these stories of both the victims and the survivors in Lullaby, it's basically what Winston Churchill said: those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. So each event, like, it holds its own significance, and it's crucial that we absorb these lessons from the past so we don't do it again and protect others from making these mistakes. For Lullaby to be recognized for Outstanding True Crime with that intent, it just means the world. So with that being said, welcome to Lullaby. On the last episode before the Thanksgiving break, I examined and myth-busted the infamous case of Helter Skelter and the Charles Manson family. And tonight is a case that is going to leave many of you wanting justice for Lavina Johnson, and hopefully all of you. I hope you all want justice for her, and for those who have suffered fates like her story. Her family is continuously seeking support and justice for Lavina, and they are up against one of the world's most powerful organizations, the United States Armed Forces, the Pentagon. And it's crucial to acknowledge that not all of the individuals in the military endorse such behavior that we are going to discuss, as many of them are dedicated to protecting their countries. No matter where you are across the globe, your military is important for your country. So we thank everyone for their service to keep their countries protected for a good cause. Obviously, we're not promoting war for the sake of having fucking war. Fuck that shit. Anyways, so there are scuzzy individuals who get shielded from such crimes, and it's not right. So my sources for this episode are from the Johnson family themselves, and they are trying to get the word out about the case of Lavina Johnson. Her father tells everyone he can, and I want the Fear Cult to also be aware of this case. So get comfortable, because sweet dreams are made of these. The following story contains subject matter involving graphic descriptions of suicide, racism, sexual assault, rape, and murder. Please take into consideration that some topics may be disturbing for some listeners. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
What is the military
over here
hiding?
We want your statement right here.
Is this a cover-up?
What about the family?
We express our sincere condolences to the family and friends of PFC Johnson. We have and continue to take the death of PFC Lavina Johnson very seriously. Our lengthy and very thorough investigation by highly trained special agents is based in fact, testimonial evidence, physical evidence, and forensic evidence. The independent autopsy findings by Armed Forces Medical Examiner's Office came to the same conclusion. Tragically, there are many misrepresentations of facts being circulated on the internet that are false and unsubstantiated. Our condolences to the Johnson family. Thank you.
Will there be a further investigation? What is the military hiding?
This is the true story of Private Lavina Johnson. Lavina Lynn Johnson was born on July 27, 1985, in Florissant, Missouri, United States. She was one of five siblings, her only sister Lakeisha and her three brothers, John, Jay, and Jermaine. Dr. John Johnson and Linda Johnson, both parents of Lavina, had remarkable careers within the Department of the Military. Her father, Dr. Johnson's commitment to serving his country extended for nearly three decades, both as a civilian employee and as a veteran, who proudly served for 3 years. After his military service, he pursued a higher education and obtained a doctorate in psychology, specializing in behavioral psychology. Dr. Johnson's extensive experience and expertise as a seasoned military psychologist with a PhD in behavioral psychology, it made him an asset within the Department of the Army. He made significant contributions to the welfare of military personnel through his involvement in the department's drug abuse program. Meanwhile, his wife, Linda Johnson, dedicated herself to troop support. Together, Dr. Johnson and Linda Johnson exemplified their dedication to supporting and assisting the U.S. military throughout their careers, which only makes this case even more heartbreaking. Lavina was an exceptionally intelligent student who consistently made the honor roll, achieving a remarkable 95% of the years she spent in school. She was not only academically gifted, but she was also a passionate advocate for recycling. She was a generous blood donor to the Salvation Army and a dedicated member of PETA. Her father affectionately referred to her as Miss America due to her unwavering commitment to making a positive impact on the world. Additionally, Lavina displayed remarkable discipline by teaching herself martial arts to ensure her own protection. After graduating from Hazelwood Central High School, Lavina made the decision to enlist in the U.S. Army. Her motivation for joining the Army stemmed from her desire to alleviate the financial burden of college tuition on her parents. With her younger sister, Lakeisha, also in the process of selecting a college, Lavina wanted to prevent her parents from experiencing the stress of having to pay for two children's educations. Her parents made it clear that she didn't have to enlist in the military, as they had more than enough money to pay for her college education, as well as that of her siblings. Her father, Dr. John Johnson, to this day firmly believes that Lavina was indoctrinated by recruiters who visited Hazelwood Central High School. Despite her parents' initial opposition to her choice, Lavina took it upon herself to reassure them that her deployment to Iraq did not involve direct combat, emphasizing that her assigned role was relatively safe and away from intense fighting, and she firmly believed that she would be fine. After the graduation ceremony for basic training, Lavina stood tall as her superiors applauded her mental toughness and strength. Despite her petite stature at 5'1" and 110 pounds, Lavina became an exemplary figure for the male cadets. Lavina's deployment eventually took her to Iraq, where she served as a dedicated private first class, stationed in Balad. She was assigned to the 129th Corps Support Battalion. Her commitment to her duties and her determination to support her family were evident as she set out on this new chapter of her life. At only 19 years old, Lavina was ready to follow in the footsteps of her veteran father, John, and those before her. Assigned with the responsibility of opening and closing the communication center, Lavina diligently carried out her daily duties. Because Lavina worked near the telephone, she was able to call her parents almost daily and never had any issues. However, on July 13, 2005, she faced a troubling situation. When she attempted to close the center, the soldiers present refused to leave, giving her attitude and laughing at her, mocking her. Without losing her professionalism, Lavina insisted that the men leave at once. It was only when a general intervened and ordered the men to leave that they actually complied, smirking and brushing by her as they strutted by. When Lavina called her father the next day, as she usually did, the conversation led to the incident at the call center the previous night. Lavina explained to her father that the general had criticized her for having a soft voice, suggesting that it was the reason the soldiers did not listen to her. Concerned by this interaction, Lavina's father John expressed his unease. He advised her to approach her commander and request a battle buddy, emphasizing the importance of her safety as a 19-year-old woman surrounded by potentially volatile situations. However, Lavina hesitated. She didn't want to create any unnecessary drama. Her father, John, understanding the gravity of the situation, assured her that if she didn't act soon, that he himself would intervene. As a veteran, he knew that his daughter should not be in Iraq without a battle buddy. Unfortunately, John's attempt to contact her company commander would come too late. On July 17, 2005, Lavina called her father back home. Many important topics were discussed between Lavina and her parents. According to her family, three things were discussed. Firstly, Lavina enthusiastically informed them that her unit was scheduled to rotate back to the United States in a few months. She shared her plans to stay in the States for a year and then pursue college after her next rotation back in Iraq. Secondly, she mentioned her excitement to starting a new job at the camp the following Monday and expressed her intention to call her parents on Tuesday to share the details about her new role. And lastly, Lavina reminisced about her family's tradition of decorating the Christmas tree every Saturday after Thanksgiving. Lavina assured her father John and her sister Lakeisha that she would be home for Christmas that year, and she asked them not to decorate the tree until her return. This tradition was important to the Johnsons, and to have Lavina home for the holidays was the best news they could hear. The phone call was light and airy, and everything was left on good terms. Later that same night, on July 17th, two friends of Lavina in Iraq went to her door, but received no response. Concerned, they returned the following morning on July 18th to pick her up for class. But once again, she didn't answer. It was unlike Lavina to miss her commitments, and they reported her missing when she failed to show up to class by 10 a.m. 2 days later, at 7:30 a.m. on July 19, 2005, the doorbell rang at the Johnsons' home, followed by a banging at the door. John and Linda were still in bed. Looking out the window, Linda spotted a soldier from the U.S. Army standing on their porch. Filled with concern, Linda asked her husband what this could mean. John, equally concerned, suspected that something had happened to their daughter, Lavina. Expecting to see a chaplain, John was surprised to find a staff sergeant at their door instead. While a sense of relief washed over him, Linda from the upstairs balcony anxiously asked the sergeant what he wanted. With a cold and stoic demeanor, the sergeant said that he had a message from the Secretary of Defense. This morning, Lavina L. Johnson died of self-inflicted wounds. The sergeant did not provide any specific details about what had occurred specifically. Overwhelmed with disbelief, John collapsed on the stairs, unable to comprehend that his daughter would take her own life. Linda's anguish echoed through their home as she let out a heart-wrenching cry. She bellowed in disbelief, stating that their beloved daughter, Lavina, would never do this to herself. The poor mother collapsed on the floor, feeling her entire world crumble at the devastating news. Upon hearing their mother's cries, Lavina's brothers rushed upstairs from the basement. Seeking clarification, John asked the soldier if he was directly implying that his daughter had committed suicide. The stoic sergeant responded by stating that Lavina's death was under investigation as a suicide. Linda Johnson declared, "She would never do this. Our Lavina would never do this to herself. Someone did this. Someone took her from us." Lavina Lynn Johnson died 8 days short of her 20th birthday in Iraq. Lavina's father, Dr. John Johnson, wasted no time making phone calls to gather more information about his daughter's alleged suicide. He wasn't convinced. The Johnson family knew Lavina well, and they were certain that suicide would have never been an option for her. Her father, Dr. Johnson, had been a military psychologist for 25 years, specializing in behavioral psychology. He worked with soldiers and civilians suffering from mental illness. He knew the signs. When John was asked later if he ever detected any signs of depression or signals from his daughter, he stated, quote, "None of that. And one thing further, I worked for the Department of the Army in their drug abuse program, and the first thing they taught me is how to pick up people that have suicidal tendencies, and I did not detect that in my daughter." Driven by his doubts that his daughter took her own life, Dr. Johnson immediately took action the following day. He reached out to individuals he knew had connections in Iraq, seeking more information. One of his friends happened to be a police officer who had contacts in the region. It was through this network that the Johnsons received shocking news. Lavina was not found dead in her barracks as initially reported by the military. Instead, she was discovered lifeless in a construction contractor's tent, off limits to military personnel. 2 days later, a casualty liaison arrived at the Johnson residence in Missouri. When the military asked Dr. Johnson to give permission for a closed casket at her funeral, he demanded to know exactly how his daughter committed suicide. The military officials stated that Lavina had been found dead in her barracks, yet the Johnsons found through their own sources that she had been found in a contractor's tent. The cause of her death was reported as a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head with an M16 rifle. This raised flags for Dr. Johnson. He suspected foul play, as his daughter had shown zero signs of suicidal indicators or depression prior to her death. He then asked the military if they had performed a rape kit or swabbed for DNA under her fingernails. He was told no. The military dismissed the need for such measures, claiming that her death was a suicide, and therefore DNA testing was deemed unnecessary. To Lavina's father, Dr. John Johnson, this was not the correct answer, and he then demanded that Lavina was to have an open casket funeral. The intent was so that he could look upon the face of his daughter one last time. If she did indeed take her own life with an M16 rifle, it would be impossible to cover up. On July 22, 2005, the military performed an autopsy on 19-year-old Lavina Johnson. The autopsy showed that Private Johnson sustained only, quote, non-serious injuries prior to her death, end quote. This included a busted lip, broken teeth, and scratch marks on her neck, followed by a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head, being the official military cause of death. On July 28, 2005, the Johnson family, along with friends and fellow soldiers, attended the funeral of Lavina Johnson at Jefferson Barracks National Cemetery in Missouri. As the family mourned, waiting to pay their respects to Lavina, it was her younger sister who approached the casket first. Her father, Dr. Johnson, recalled the exact moment, saying, quote, "We wanted to have an open casket, and my daughter, Lakeisha, walked over to that casket. The next thing I know, I hear, 'They murdered my sister. Did you see her face? Her face is all beat up and her nose is all broke.'" The Johnson family compared Lavina's corpse to that of Emmett Till, who was also an African-American citizen. So I want to briefly explain the significance of Emmett Till, as it was the nationwide capitalist for civil rights movement in the 1950s. In August of 1955, 14-year-old Emmett Till, he was visiting his relatives in Mississippi, and he entered a store with his cousins. And then he was accused of whistling at a 21-year-old Caucasian woman by the name of Carolyn Bryant. So Carolyn told her husband and her brother-in-law, who later kidnapped, beat, tortured, murdered, and dismembered private parts of 14-year-old Emmett Till on August 28, 1955. And these two men were acquitted because they had an all-white jury, and this outraged the African-American community. As it should. There was not a fair trial at all. Emmett was not proven to have whistled at this girl. It was all hearsay. And he was a child. He was 14 years old, and his body was brutalized. When pictures of his face emerged, the public lost their mind because he was a 14-year-old African-American child whose face was unrecognizable. It was beaten, it was swollen, and this ignited attention to racial violence and injustice in America. So circling back to Lavina Johnson's face, comparing it to Emmett Till, her family said it was very similar. Lavina was part of a successful African-American family, and they knew that they had been lied to by the U.S. military. As said earlier, an M16, it would obliterate a person's face, not just move their nose around, bruise a couple of cheekbones, and bust some teeth. But why lie about it? And that's what her father, Dr. John Johnson, set out to discover. And you want this man as your father. I am not kidding around. The Johnson family are extremely lucky to have this man in their lives. You're going to fall in love with him by the end of this, I promise you. He never, till his day, has stopped fighting for his daughter. And watching him and his wife, they confidently seek justice for Lavina. And it's incredible because they are against the Pentagon. That's so intimidating, but they don't fucking care. They want the world to know what happened to their daughter and that she did not commit suicide. And this case is only just beginning. I still have to get my fucking words out. I'm caught up in the mood. Let's continue. As Dr. Johnson approached the casket, his suspicions were correct. Lavina had not died of an M16 gunshot wound to the head upon his inspection. From what he was able to see, her face was badly beaten and swollen, where all previous signs of a happy teenager were gone. Dr. Johnson made an inquisitive statement saying, quote, "I'm a veteran, and I am very familiar with an M16 rifle. I used to be a drug abuse counselor for the Army at Fort Leonard Wood, and one of my clients committed suicide. He was about 6 feet tall, and he put that M16 rifle in his mouth and blew his face off. Lavina got a little bullet hole at the top left side of her cranium, up over the left frontal lobe and the left eye. You can see the path of the bullet coming down. That's not even having to be a forensic expert to see that yourself. End quote. The small bullet wound to the top left frontal lobe traveling down her skull upon impact means that she was shot from the top of her head, and the size of the wound indicated a 9mm pistol. And since there was no exit wound, the bullet should still be in her lower jaw or tongue, further indicating that she was shot from the top of the head from the left. Lavina would not have been able to shoot herself from the top of her head on the left side, as her father pointed out that Lavina was right-handed. The family also took note that Lavina's gloves had been glued onto her hands. The funeral director pointed out that this was not a common practice, and Dr. Johnson knew that he had to get his hands on the military's documents and autopsy reports. He needed to know exactly what happened and what they knew. At every step, the military stonewalled the Johnson family, refusing to release the forensic reports and physical evidence, leaving them in a constant state of frustration for months. Despite the military investigators' insistence that Lavina's suicide was the result of a breakup, Dr. Johnson remained skeptical. According to the military, Lavina had been dating a man for 2 months before he abruptly ended their relationship over an email, leading her to print out the heart-wrenching messages and carry them with her. Alongside a platonic unnamed male friend, Lavina went to the military store to purchase M&Ms and a soda. Her M16 service rifle was slung over her shoulder, according to witnesses. The military investigators claim that after returning to her barracks, she left once more, and this time alone. She made her way to a tent belonging to a military contractor, where, as per their narrative, she discovered a can of aerosol, and distraught and overwhelmed, they alleged that she set the breakup emails on fire. Then, according to investigators, Lavina Johnson, standing at just 5'1", placed the barrel of her 40-inch M16 rifle into her mouth and pulled the trigger, ending her life in a single shot. A spent shell casing was found near her right leg, but the fatal bullet remained elusive, leaving the investigation inconclusive. To the Johnsons, nothing added up, but this didn't explain the state of her body at the funeral. Dr. Johnson again demanded the military's investigation, the autopsy, and the crime scene photo documents. When the military informed Dr. Johnson that he had no legal right to access these reports, he confidently invoked the Freedom of Information Act. Finally, after a 10-month-long battle, the military sent the Johnsons the information they requested. So this next part is really going to cream your corn. It's really going to grind your gears. It's really going to crush your cookie. The military send over 800 documents, which is great, right? That's great. We want that. We want that information. And 300 photographs. Now here's the catch. The United States military couldn't find any better quality than poorly Xeroxed black and white photographs. Like throwback to the crappy photocopied textbook diagrams on exams in school. There's memes of it everywhere. They're still making fun of this. It's like a perfect, nice diagram in the textbook and then a black blob on the test with all these tiny lines, and it says, label all 40 parts of the human cell and then the plant cell. It's like triggering. And that's what the military did. They just sent over 800 documents and 300 crappy Xeroxed black and white photocopies of basically her autopsy and crime scene photos. And they just expected the Johnsons to be like, okay, it was a suicide. Are you kidding? So her father, Dr. Johnson, this isn't going to stop him. This guy's a tank. He pores over these images and these documents, and he analyzes every little detail. And still, horrible quality of these photographs, he was able to see that the story wasn't adding up. In the crime scene photos, you can see the M16 rifle Lavina allegedly shot herself with found perfectly parallel to her body inside the KBR contractor tent, recalling how the military initially told him that she was found in her barracks. Now, hidden within this pile of 300 photographs was a Xeroxed copy of a mysterious CD-ROM, and this CD would blow the case wide open. How the CD photo got into the documents, no one knows. Possibly a good Samaritan. But Dr. Johnson, he didn't physically have this CD. He needed to get his hands on it. So Dr. Johnson, he contacts the Army and he demands the physical CD-ROM for his own evidence. And the military writes him back and tells him that he doesn't have legal right to that CD. And Dr. Johnson invokes the Privacy Act as well as the Freedom of Information Act, and he boldly states, as the father of Lavina Johnson, I am the only person who has legal right to see that evidence. Get him. So the military basically says, you're going to have to do better than that. We're an official government organization. What are you going to do about it? And the military told Dr. John to contact the military's legal department. And of course, Dr. Johnson did just that. He filled the Freedom of Information Act and he requested that damn CD. U.S. Representative William Lacey Clay from Missouri had been helping Dr. Johnson with these reports, specifically asking for this CD. And the Johnsons, they had been lucky because Congressman Lacey Clay had been working on the Patrick Tillman hearing. Now, my hardcore NFL fans will have perked up at that name. Patrick Tillman was a 27-year-old American football player for the NFL who played for the Arizona Cardinals. And he left the NFL to enlist in the United States Army in May of 2002 after 9/11. On April 22, 2004, Specialist Patrick Daniel Tillman was reported killed in combat by the enemy. A month later, on May 28, 2004, the Pentagon contacted the Tillman family and reported that Patrick was killed by friendly fire and not the enemy. This delay of information, it was determined by the family to be delayed until after Patrick's funeral to protect the image of the U.S. military. And then in 2007, the Pentagon ruled Patrick Tillman's death as accidental, and he was promoted from specialist to corporal, receiving both the Silver Star and the Purple Heart medals. Let's add a little grease to this dumpster fire. The Washington Post reported that prior to his death, Patrick called the invasion and occupation of Iraq, quote, fucking illegal. And then he winds up dead by friendly fire. Patrick's mother, she appeared on Larry King, and she discussed how the military covered up not only the death of men, but women as well, and then compared the death of her son to Lavina Johnson. With that spotlight, Dr. Johnson, with the help of Congressman Lacey Clay, were able to acquire the mysterious CD-ROM, and on it were highly detailed photos of the crime scene and autopsy of Lavina Johnson. This is where this case goes downhill super quick. Dr. Johnson, he sent his brother Joseph, who held a degree in criminal science and was also a 10-year Army vet, the evidence from this case. And Joseph studied the photographs and reports and told his brother, quote, I'm looking at a dislocated shoulder and a broken neck, so someone beat her up. Somebody shoved something into Lavina. This was rape, end quote, labeling the death a homicide. What was found inside of Lavina's brutalized vagina and anal canal appeared to be lye, which is a dangerously corrosive caustic substance that can be used to dissolve DNA evidence. Recall back to 2005, when Dr. Johnson asked if a rape kit was conducted on Lavina, and the military said no because there were no signs of sexual assault. So you think it would be important to explain in the reports why there was a corrosive chemical inside of her body. But shockingly, none of these inquiries, including bite marks on her body, a broken neck, a broken shoulder, and nose, were included in the military's reports. Because that would suggest foul play, and then legally there would have to be a homicide investigation, which you think would be okay for the military to perform, unless it was a high-ranking military official who was involved. Lavina died in 2005, and it's now 2007, and then the Johnsons find this new discovery, and they bring it to the Army, and this is how the Army tried to explain the situation to Lavina's father. Dr. Johnson recalled the situation saying, quote, the Army's contention was that my daughter was a whore. She was screwing everybody and she came down with a sexually transmitted disease, which they described as condyloma, HPV. They sent us in black and white Xerox copies of these photos, including a picture of her vaginal area. Now, on that picture, we couldn't see it very clearly, but my brother looked at it and he said, there is something in the vaginal canal and whatever it is got her wedged open, end quote. So the Johnsons at this point are beyond fed up with the military investigators, and they made the hard decision to exhume Lavina's body and perform an independent autopsy. Dr. Johnson's brother, Joseph, he was the guy who had the degree in criminal science. He went through all the poor Xerox photos, and just from those, he was able to tell that something happened to Lavina that pointed to a homicide and it was not a suicide. The military didn't report any of these findings in their official reports. So Dr. Johnson recruited the help of attorney Donald Watkins, and they concluded that the U.S. military purposely overlooked the evidence that was laid out right in front of them that proved Lavina Johnson did not commit suicide, and it was treated as a suicide to prevent further investigation into the military. Now, the second independent autopsy. Let's talk about this autopsy. This is where I feel so bad for Lavina, because it's as if every turn, there is some complication to her story. The Johnson family, they hired the top pathologist in St. Louis City, Dr. Michael Graham, to perform the second autopsy. But 2 days before the scheduled autopsy, Dr. Graham called Dr. Johnson and informed him that one of the men that signed off on this autopsy was in the military and was a good friend, and it would be best if the Johnsons found another professional to perform the autopsy. What? I know. Dr. Johnson, he questioned why the city's top trained pathologist would request that someone else do the autopsy and why he wasn't professional enough to give an unbiased opinion. Dr. Graham hesitated, but then he said, "There will be no issues and I will perform the autopsy for Lavina." What the pathologist did not do was include the physical damage to the body. He deemed the death as inconclusive, not a homicide, and not a suicide, and Dr. Johnson called this conclusion disappointing. Obviously, the second autopsy also stated that it was not them that removed and filled Lavina's vaginal and anal canal with lye. But Lavina's body came to the second autopsy like that, meaning it was the military autopsy that had known about the surgical removal and did not include that in their report. The military deliberately omitted these critical findings from their reports, purposely overlooking the evidence that was laid out right in front of them that proved Lavina was murdered, and it was treated as a suicide to prevent further investigation into the military, intentionally disregarding the undeniable evidence that clearly indicated Lavina Johnson was murdered. Breathe. This cover-up was orchestrated to stifle any further inquiries into the military's involvement. So now we're really going to break all this evidence down. Are you ready, Faircult? We are ready. Let's go, let's go, let's go. But first, let's recap so you guys don't forget, because I'm going to put an emphasis on what little information the military initially provided the family, and they still claim to be the truth to this day, is that Private Lavina Johnson, at 5'1", 110 pounds, at 19 years old, shot herself in the mouth with an M16 rifle. Initially, they were told it was in the barracks, but then it was later confirmed that it was in the contractor's tent. The military autopsy reported that Lavina had sustained only non-serious injuries prior to her death, such as a busted lip, broken teeth, and scratch marks on her neck. They then stonewalled the Johnsons to prevent them from getting any more information because the case is closed. But the Johnsons were able to prove that Lavina suffered way more than the military claimed. Here we go. Blood was found outside of the contractor's tent. The back of Lavina's clothes had debris on them, which indicated that she had been dragged into the contractor's tent after a violent attack, but prior to the tent being set on fire? Oh yes, Faircult. The tent was on fire, and the military claimed that the tent was set on fire by Lavina when she was burning the pages written about her ex-boyfriend of 2 months, and then she proceeded to shoot herself in distress. The box of matches and the can of aerosol spray that was used to ignite the fire inside of the tent revealed that Lavina Johnson's fingerprints were nowhere to be found. An unidentified footprint was discovered inside of the tent. This raises more questions. And the right side of Lavina's back and her right hand had been burned, which likely explained why her gloves had been glued on her hands during the funeral with no explanation. Attorney Donald Watkins pointed out that the burn pattern from the flammable liquid found on her body indicated that it was not Lavina who had poured it. And additionally, the physical forensic evidence directly contradicted the military's suicide theory. How could a petite young woman with a proven cervical fracture before death, standing at 5'1" and weighing 110 pounds, have the mobility to manage to insert the barrel of a 40-inch M16 rifle into her mouth and use her fingers to pull the trigger, and yet her head is still intact? It's worth noting that her shoes were still tightly laced on her feet in the crime scene photos, ruling out the possibility of her using her feet. Her father had even mentioned that he has seen a grown man who has used an M16 to commit suicide by putting it in his mouth, and it vaporized their skull. Dr. Johnson said, quote, Lavina's skull had a small bullet hole in the top left side of her cranium, up over the left frontal lobe and left eye. You could see the path of the bullet coming down, and that's not even having to be a forensic expert to see that for yourself, end quote. It was pointed out by Dr. Johnson and attorney Donald Watkins that the point of the entry wound on the top left side of her cranium, it was similar to a point-blank range kill shot by a 9mm service pistol, which is commonly carried by the military officers, and was described by attorney Donald Watkins that the downward trajectory was also visible in the second autopsy, which not only contradicted the military's narrative that she shot herself in the mouth with an M16, but with a completely different gun. So I found it interesting that attorney Donald Watkins explained that the bullet should have been lodged in her jaw or tongue, as there was no exit wound, and it was discovered during the second autopsy that Lavina's tongue was removed. The second autopsy also reported that Lavina's body came to them with her tongue removed, which means the removal was performed during the military's initial autopsy and not documented. A spent shell casing was found next to her right leg, but it was not the fatal bullet. And it gets more complex. Lavina's fingerprints were absent from the M16 rifle, and there was no gunshot residue on her hands. The military failed to conduct a DNA test on the M16 despite the presence of two small cuts on Lavina's right thumb that could have produced bodily secretions on the gun, the magazine, or the trigger. The barrel, too. The barrel was never tested for DNA, which could have definitively proven whether it had been in her mouth. The tip and back area of Lavina's skull were still intact with a small, clean bullet path, not suggesting a self-inflicted M16 gunshot wound. And this is the cherry on top. The M16 that was found next to Lavina's body was not assigned to Lavina Johnson. Her M16, it had the serial number 709-7069, and it was the only firearm ever issued to her. The M16 that was found near her body didn't belong to her, and it had the serial number 708-502-028. Nowhere in the military's criminal investigation records does it explain who was issued the mystery rifle found at the crime scene and what happened to Lavina's. No bullets were found, and the kill shot bullet was not found unless it was in her jaw, and that's why they removed her tongue. Remember? And that wasn't even an M16 bullet! This is just a whole lot of mystery for what the military concluded to be a simple suicide. Again, suggesting cover-up. But why? Why go through all this trouble if it was a murder committed by another common soldier? And the answer came pretty quick to the Johnson family and Donald Watkins. If the military, the U.S. military, was going to cover up the rape and murder of 19-year-old Lavina Johnson, it means a high-ranking member was involved. The Johnson family was left with all these proven facts right in their face, and the military just said, the case is closed. Like, it's frustrating. It's really frustrating that they're not getting any form of validation. And the military releases a statement confirming that the case is closed and no further investigation is needed, and any online information found is false. Again, my sources for this episode are all from public interviews with the Johnson family and their team and attorney Donald Watkins. The Johnson family isn't hiding anything because they just want justice for Lavina and her father, Dr. Johnson. He was in the hospital for a period of time, and he told everyone he could about this case because he wanted everyone to know what happened to Lavina and that she did not commit suicide. They want this case to be reopened, and to this day, they're fighting to have the Army reopen this case. And this is why it's important to keep these discussions open about true crime. This case is so shady. Attorney Donald Watkins, along with the Johnson family, they continued to do their research, and it was Donald Watkins who was able to conclude a possible motive for the horrific crimes against Lavina. Now, before I go forward, it's important to note that the leading suspect, according to attorney Donald Watkins, has not been charged of any involvement in Lavina's case because her death is ruled as a suicide by the Department of Defense and therefore is innocent until proven guilty. The information I'm going to provide was made public in 2016 by attorney Donald Watkins, and his conclusion of events for the motive for what happened are what I'm about to explain. And then I will provide a detailed explanation why this motive was concluded. On that fateful night in July 2005, Lavina Johnson visited a platonic male friend, and together they went to the military store to buy M&Ms and soda. After making the purchase, they returned to the barracks. Shortly after midnight, Lavina left the barracks alone, and on her way back, she inadvertently witnessed her commander engaging in sexual activity with his lover. In a state of shock and fear, the commander's violent outburst towards Lavina resulted in severe injuries prior to her death. Her teeth were knocked backwards, her nose and shoulder were broken, and she suffered a severe cervical fracture, among other injuries. The commander then proceeded to manipulate the crime scene, attempting to make it appear as if two separate criminal acts had occurred, a rape and a suicide, followed by dragging her body into the contractor's tent, which would explain the trail of blood left outside. At the scene, a man's footprint was discovered, and it was labeled as unidentified. Lavina was then subjected to a horrifying act where her pants and undergarments were pulled off, followed by the malicious pouring of a substance resembling lye, a highly corrosive caustic compound, onto and into her intimate areas. Her clothes were then put back onto her body. This act aimed to simulate a rape scenario, with the perpetrator seemingly attempting to eradicate any trace of their DNA evidence. The crime scene in question was meticulously manipulated to give the appearance of Lavina Johnson having taken her own life. The deliberate positioning of an M16 rifle across her lifeless body to further deceive investigators, a spent shell casing was strategically placed near her remains, though it did not match the gun. And contrary to the stage scene, the M16 rifle was never discharged within the confines of the tent. Instead, it was the commander who callously fired a single round from his 9mm pistol, executing Lavina Johnson with a single shot to the top of her skull. The bullet's trajectory traversed through her brain, tracing a path down the left side of her head before coming to rest into her tongue. A final attempt to conceal the heinous act was the commander set fire to the tent before departing from the crime scene. The military's own documented records provide a compelling narrative that sheds light on the shady circumstances surrounding Lavina Johnson's tragic demise. These records offer an explanation as to how and why a physically battered soldier with a fractured neck ended up with a gunshot wound to the top of her head. They also account for the absence of the unidentified fingerprints on the M16 rifle discovered at the scene, the lack of gunpowder residue on Lavina Johnson's hands, and the puzzling absence of an M16 bullet, despite the presence of an empty shell casing near her body. Furthermore, it clarifies that the M16 found at the scene was not the one issued to Private Johnson. The lead investigator had to wait 4 days for the military's criminal investigation division to finish their investigation before starting his own. The crime scene was contaminated by multiple first responders, compromising the evidence. Despite overwhelming physical evidence of murder and a cover-up, the base commander's detectives pushed for classifying it as a suicide. As a result, the evidence of Lavina Johnson's murder was ignored, while the evidence of the suicide was emphasized. The military autopsy conducted under their supervision raises further concerns. The unexplained removal of Lavina Johnson's tongue during the examination, without any mention or justification in the records, adds to the suspicious nature of the investigation. The military's deliberate obstruction of releasing the investigation records surrounding Private Johnson's murder, coupled with the unexplained dismissal of the commander from his position, suggests that high-ranking military officials were involved. The military's tight control over every aspect of the crime scene, their management of the criminal investigation, and their initial autopsy, conducted with the assumption that there would be no further investigation, all point to an effort to bury the truth along with Lavina Johnson's body. According to attorney Donald Watkins, the evidence surrounding the cover-up, execution-style murder of 19-year-old Private Lavina Johnson strongly points towards a former 4-star Army general, Kevin P. Burns, as the perpetrator. At the time, General Burns held a high-ranking position as the head of the Army's Training and Doctrine Command. This command gave him authority over Army schools, from basic training to war colleges. Lavina's connection with General Burns becomes significant, as she held a personal encounter with him just days before her untimely death. She even wrote his name in her notepad and shared this information with her father. Unbeknownst to Lavina, General Burns was engaged in an extramarital affair with an unnamed civilian woman and had been ordered by General Peter J. Shoemaker, the Army's chief of staff, to end the affair. However, General Burns chose to defy this order and instead opted to make their affair more secretive, risking potential court-martial for disobeying a direct order. While extramarital affairs among military generals are strictly prohibited, they are not uncommon. In some cases, these affairs can lead to reckless and even criminal behavior as an individual gets involved and goes through great lengths to maintain secrecy. A high-profile example would be of then-CIA Director General David Petraeus and his lover, Paula Broadwell. This serves as a recent example of such deceit. The circumstances surrounding Private Lavina Johnson's murder, coupled with General Burns's involvement in an illicit affair and his potential motive to protect his own reputation and career, strongly suggest his culpability in the military cover-up. Again, it's critical to note that a thorough investigation and legal proceedings are necessary to establish truth. 3 weeks after the death of Lavina Johnson, on August 8, 2005, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, in consultation with President George W. Bush, made the decision to relieve General Kevin P. Burns of his command. This action occurred a mere 3 months before General Burns's scheduled retirement date. The Army officially announced that General Burns was relieved of his command due to unspecified, quote, personal conduct. However, Attorney Donald Watkins continued digging and discovered off-the-record information leaked from the Pentagon, suggesting that General Burns' dismissal was the result of his refusal to comply with General Shoemaker's order to end his extramarital affair. These sources indicated that General Burns had engaged in an affair which violated military regulations and warranted disciplinary action. Attorney Donald Watkins stated that the revelation that the Pentagon had discovered General Kevin Burns' involvement in the murder of Private Lavina Johnson is shocking and deeply troubling. It raises serious questions about the integrity and accountability of the military justice system, as well as the actions taken by President Bush and Secretary Rumsfeld in response to this grave misconduct. The decision to remove General Burns from the Army, rather than subjecting him to a court-martial for his crimes, is highly controversial and questionable. It suggests a potential cover-up to protect high-ranking officials from the scandal and private scrutiny that would accompany a high-profile murder trial. The failure to hold General Kevin Burns accountable for his actions not only denies justice to Private Lavina Johnson and to her family, but it also undermines the principles of fairness and equality within the military justice system. On August 10, 2005, Arianna Huffington, the founder of the Huffington Post, published an article that focused on Secretary Rumsfeld's decision to fire General Burns. The article examined the circumstances surrounding the general's dismissal and raised questions about the timing of the action, considering the recent death of Private Lavina Johnson and the potential connection between the two events. The Huffington Post story brought attention to the controversial nature of General Burns's firing and the possible motivations behind it. This article sparked public interest and further scrutiny into the events surrounding the death and the subsequent actions taken by the military officials. The article prompted a renewed call for a thorough investigation into the events leading up to Lavina's death. Here's a direct quote from the Huffington Post article. "The Burns firing is stunning. In modern times, no four-star general has ever been relieved of duty for disciplinary actions. Prior to this incident, Burns had a spotless military record. He has been separated from his wife since May 2004, and the allegations do not involve anyone under his command or connected to the DOD, and he was already set to retire in November. Something doesn't add up. Why would the Army really can a four-star general with 36 years of service, 3 months shy of his retirement, because he screwed someone other than his wife, in the middle of a war? There has to be more, much more, to the story than is being told." The investigation into the death of Private Lavina Johnson was listed as 13-F-1107 on the Pentagon's Department Level of Interest list in 2013, even though her case had been closed for 8 years at the time. This listing was at the request of the Office of the Secretary of Defense and Joint Staff, elevating the matter to one of national security. Any Freedom of Information Act inquiries regarding her death had to be reviewed and approved by top officials before a response could be provided. The placement of her case on the DLI list was notable and surrounded by many involved in the Iraq War. Despite a total of 83 military suicides in 2005 alone, Private Lavina Johnson's case was the only one listed on the Pentagon's Department Level Interest list in 2013. There is no statute of limitations barring the prosecution of Lavina Johnson's murder and reopening up the case. there is only a lack within the Pentagon to do so. Lavina Lynn Johnson volunteered to serve in the U.S. military as a loyal and dedicated soldier who served in the war zone. Lavina Johnson deserved dignity, and justice has eluded the poor woman and the Johnson family for over 18 years. According to the Department of Defense, 1 in 3 women who join the U.S. military will be sexually assaulted or raped by men in the military. The rate of non-combat deaths of female soldiers like Lavina's requires more awareness and attention. In July 2023, the Johnson family requested that the official date of Lavina's death be changed in the documents and on her tombstone from July 19, 2005 to July 17, 2005, because the military document given to the Johnsons was not the date that was originally given to Lavina. Her father, Dr. John Johnson, said, quote, "To look at the cobblestone and see the wrong date is just awful. Awful. It's just insulting." The United States Army has stated that their investigation was thorough and complete. A spokesperson for the Department of the Army Criminal Investigation Division stated, quote, "The investigation conducted into the tragic passing of Private Lavina Johnson confirms the date of her death is 19 July 2005, end quote. Despite the Johnson support from the state senator, Angela Walton Mosley, who explained that the request could be done and it was very simple to do, but the U.S. military refuses to change the date. Community activists are left hurt and confused as to why such a simple request cannot be made. To this day, the Johnson family still fights for Lavina. Her father, Dr. John Johnson, had this to say to the military, quote, "My daughter was a third generation. I worked for you for 25 years supporting troops. She gets brutally raped and murdered, and you treat us like dirt. This has gone on for years. I gotta get justice for my baby. And did I find out what they've done to other families? So my fight is bigger than just Lavina." Fear Cult, that is the true case of Lavina Johnson and the Johnson family's ongoing fight for justice for their daughter. So in 2010, there was a documentary titled Lavina Johnson, The Silent Truth, that I highly recommend that you should watch if you're able to stream it. I'm in Canada, so it was difficult for me to track it down and get it, but it's definitely worth it. There have been a lot of online petitions to bring change and reopen Lavina's case. And now that you have heard it, Fear Cult, I'm hoping that you can bring change by even telling someone about her story. The purpose is to share the episode, recommending the documentary Lavina Johnson, The Silent Truth to others, to keep her in the spotlight so people do not forget her like the military wants people to. That's an opinion. Obviously, they didn't say that. So thank you to Captain Cook's Food, Christopher, and Tyler and Eric from the Team TNA podcast for volunteering their acting to the dramatization. Much appreciated, as always. You're fantastic.
There'll be more, many more. They're coming for me now. And then they'll come for you.
The never-ending quest to find a truly scary movie is forever ongoing, and this week I am recommending the 2018 Korean found footage film Gonjem Haunted Asylum. The plot basically involves a crew of horror web series travelers who go to an abandoned asylum for a live broadcast. And soon they encounter way more than they expected. And it starts off a little slow. I won't lie. It does. Just a little bit, a little bit, a little bit. But when it gets scary, it's really good. If you Google the movie, an image is going to pop up of a girl's face. That's all I'm going to say. And when Eric, actually, from the Team TNA podcast, told me about this movie, I Googled it, not having any idea what was going on. And then that popped up, and I was like, Eric, for the love of fucking God, warning next time. There's something that Asian horror films do, which is that look, and it just works. It's so good, and I love it. Keep doing it, because it gets me every damn time. Now I tried to scare you, now you try to scare me by sending me your horror movie recommendations on Instagram and Slasher at Lullaby the Fear Podcast. You can go to lullabythefearpodcast.com to check out the latest trailer for Gonjem Haunted Asylum. Share the podcast with your friends to keep these cases alive so victims do not get forgotten. And rate on Spotify and Apple. 5 stars really helps the show, and it's almost the holidays. So stay safe, everyone. So thank you for listening to this week's lullaby. Sweet dreams. Lights out.